Welcome, everyone, to Mintel's Little Conversation, real conversations with actionable insights into what consumers want and why. I'm Lynn Dornblaser, Principal Consultant at Mintel, and today we're discussing Natural Products Expo West. I'll talk about that in just a second. Today, I'm joined by two of my colleagues who were at the show who can tell us all about it. We've got Melanie Bartlemy, who is Associate Director of Mintel Food and Drink, and Michelle Golden, who is Director of Mintel Consulting. So as I said, today we're talking about Expo West. Now, for those of you in the U.S. who are familiar with U.S. trade shows, you would know Natural Products Expo West has been around a long time. I certainly went to a lot of them over the course of time, and it continues to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Michelle tells me that organizers say that there were about 65,000 attendees and about 3,000 exhibitors, so it's a lot of stuff. So we've got a lot that we want to talk about regarding the show, but I'm going to start actually, Melanie, with a question for you, since you said the last show that you went to for Expo West was 2019, and certainly there have been a couple of them since 2019, but what would you say is different? What was different so far this year as opposed to 5 years ago when you went last time?
It's so interesting because the show feels like it's just grown and grown and grown. And I feel like for sure our energy levels were maybe a little bit harder to keep up as they were in the past post-pandemic. But also it feels like even though there have been a lot of the same kinds of products at these shows, like functionality has always been something very important to the show and especially to the kinds of beverages and protein bars and, you know, those easy to consume formats. It feels like the way that some of the products were being talked about is a little bit different than it's been in the past. And just, Michelle, I think it'll be interesting for your perspective on this too, but seeing companies trying to shove as many benefits into a single product as they possibly can.
Absolutely. I was supposed to go in March of 2020, but that didn't happen. So this was my first show.
Me too.
Seems a lifetime ago. So I really don't have anything to compare. I will say I felt the presence of every one of those 65,000 people. There was a great energy. The exhibitors had great energy. But I would agree with you, Melanie, that there was just kind of an onslaught of functionality, and brands have to be so careful that they're really providing consumers with important takeaways about their products, that it's not just they can do everything, but, you know, why should I care about your product? Some of that might be naming a product, you know, relaxation or energy or, you know, brain development, rather than leading with ingredients that the consumers might not know their function.
Did you find that there were companies that were doing a good job of leading with benefits as opposed to leading with ingredients?
I think that there definitely were some on the functionality side that really stood out for that, where there was a company that does a couple of different kinds of products, but they definitely in all of their products focus on the healthy mind, which is really interesting because all of those other benefits and functionalities that Michelle was describing, like those are definitely present as well. Focus, calm, relaxation. But this one is talking about how when you have a healthy brain, it's called Mind Right. When you have a healthy brain, all of those other things are in sync. So it kind of wraps everything up into like sort of one umbrella. So to me, that one kind of cut through the noise a little bit. If you are a consumer who's looking for something that has that primary focus benefit, but of course, there were other things in it that also were present. So it's not just, you know, brain health, but it's also about like MCT oil for energy, coffee food for focus. And so it does feel like a lot of these products maybe are doing a better job of when they are naming an ingredient, they're trying to explain what benefit that ingredient provides. I will say that some of the mushroom companies maybe should let us know a little bit why they're including what specific type of mushroom. So we have some work maybe to do, but it is nice to see that some of these things are being named in that way. I'd also be interested to see how many companies can really talk about what percentage of a product is these ingredients, you know, what level it is, you know, what kind of scientific studies they've run. I am seeing more of that, which is really promising to show that there is actually something that they have been able to measure in effect, because I think, you know, we all see so many products out there that make a lot of claims, and they're claims that we want to feel relaxed. We want to feel like our gut is working for us. But I don't know how many of us know how many CFUs of probiotics we should have, or, you know, how much MCT oil is good for our brains, you know, things like that.
I would also say there were products that did a good job of saying who they are for. We saw a lot of perimenopause and menopause products, both in supplements and there were teas, snack bars. So overall, we're seeing more interest in women's life stages, whether that be pregnancy, lactation, perimenopause, and menopause. So we're seeing that, you know, across a lot of different categories. But there were some brands that did a really good job of being very clear who their product was targeting.
I felt like one product in particular in the women's health arena that I think did a good job with that idea of naming what the ingredients are and why they're in there was this, I think it might be the energy bar that you were referring to, that it was called MenoWell. And it's an energy and protein bar, and they're talking about how it's powered by maca, fiber, and protein. And so the maca in there, they were saying, was helpful with the hormone aspect of it. And again, you know, I'd like to see some numbers, but it is interesting to see that it's not just this is for, you know, hope you feel better. Because I think when we look at women's health, there's a lot of throwing spaghetti at the wall and hoping that it helps. And so these are very promising.
It feels like we're seeing so much growth and so much more interest than we have ever in products that are specifically for women's health. And thinking about that and thinking about this show, I think that drives home really well how Expo West is often like the testing ground for really different things. Michelle, with some of those women's health products that you saw, was there anything that was like the most surprising or something that you really didn't expect to see that was positioned for women?
I don't think there was anything too surprising, because I've been reading a lot about women's life stages being very ripe for innovation. I guess I was surprised at the range of symptoms and concerns that they were addressing. So it wasn't just normally, you know, the hot flashes and night sweats and that sort of thing. It was really getting into emotional well-being. So anxiety, calm. So really kind of a holistic look at those life stages, particularly menopause, and really treating the entirety of concerns or symptoms.
Interesting.
There was also, I know this is on the supplement side, but there was a constipation relief pill for women specifically, because it was talking about how the way that your body functions in that way is affected by where you are in your cycle. And so that was really interesting to see that kind of moving into like holistically how women feel and not just this is this part of you, or this is you have PMS right now, so we're treating this. It's like more of a holistic, like what is women's health? What is optimal health for a woman at any given time?
Interesting. What were some of the other big trends that you saw while walking that enormous show floor?
Do you want to do an ingredient sort of wrap up here? Yeah. Because I know Michelle and I, when we got together, immediately we were like, this. Okay, you saw it too. And so I would say, you know, the big three for us were dates, honey, and mushrooms.
Yep.
And I honestly, having come from 2019, or having seen it in 2019, these are what I would have expected. I think they've gone in interesting directions from where we were. For instance, the company Julie's, which are snacking dates, they, I believe, debuted at Expo in 2019. I remember meeting them and they were super small. And now they have this whole range of products that are based on dates. And there's little bites and there's little tiny ones called Juliettes, and because they're medjool dates. And so it's a really lovely, it's been like a dynamic sort of organic journey, it feels like, kind of being something different, a date as a food. Yes, it's definitely there in sweeteners as well, but there were also some other snacking dates. I think that's been really interesting. Michelle, any thoughts on the honey or the mushrooms?
Well, you said it before that the mushroom folks need to do a better job of explaining which mushrooms and why. I spoke with one of the supplement companies and one of their brand reps. She even said, you know, I look to our master mushroom guy to tell me which ones I should be taking. And if she is living this day in, day out, and she still doesn't have a good sense of which ones are right for her, then it's impossible for the typical consumer to really know. With mushrooms, we also saw them with a few exhibitors being kind of a meat substitute, not part of a patty or, you know, a fake meat product, but really giving that kind of heft and umami to different sauces, like a spaghetti sauce. And that was a group that grew their own mushrooms in Chicago. So it was kind of, you know, urban farm to table kind of situation.
Yes.
So not only are we looking at the functional ingredients of mushrooms, but also for a plant-based diet, really kind of giving some of the meatiness that people crave.
Yeah, the fungitaria, yes. I believe is what that one was called. One thing that I will throw out, and I feel like I say this a lot, is that just because you can put a mushroom in something doesn't necessarily mean that you should. So I would say that for the mainstream consumer, that, you know, mushroom coffees and mushroom teas and chocolates and things like that, there are going to be some consumers who are interested in that. I think when I talk to consumers outside of the industry, aka my friends and family, they can't even picture what that could be like. And so I think that there still feels sometimes like a disconnect between seeing a ton of things like this at a show and then also figuring out how many of these are going to stay on the shelf. Like, is there really going to be a need for, and this is no disparaging any product, like for, you know, a cookie dough with mushroom in it, or, you know, a gelato with mushroom in it. And I guess we will have to wait and see, but that feels like maybe we should proceed with caution.
Right. I agree. And right in front of me, I have my little cheat sheet products, and there's a can of cold brew mushroom coffee that I haven't brought myself to try yet. I have one coffee a day, and it has to be good. And I just keep looking at this and pushing it to the back of the fridge. And what's interesting is that when I was looking for the why should I have mushroom in my coffee, very tiny font, a lot of all over the place, known for their high antioxidant, anti-inflammatory, energy boosting, and immune boosting properties. So again, yeah, it does it all. We're all going to live forever. But do I really want that in my coffee that's supposed to be kind of a nice treat or ritual for the day?
Exactly. But Michelle, all I have to comment about that is one coffee a day.
Yeah.
There's something wrong. There's something wrong there.
I have very low tolerance of caffeine. I get weird. Or
I would say, you know what? Decaf coffee is still like the big drum that I'm beating, because I know when we look at our data, desire for that is not that high out there, but we hear so many people talking about wanting to control their intake of things like sugar, of wanting to regulate, you know, to be, you know, able to really, you know, create their own roadmap. And I feel like lower, you know, caffeine levels and decaf coffee, it's like we're on the cusp of that really taking off to be something that you can have that experience. I was just talking to a colleague about a martini espresso and how we're not going to be able to partake in that trend because we can't drink caffeine that late at night. But I tried some really good decaf products from, there was a company that was there at the show called Explorer, and they have decaf, low calf, high calf. They've got all the different concentrates, and they're saying that their decaf is one of their, you know, biggest sellers. Same thing with Joe Coffee out of New York, because it's so hard to find something that is really good quality that the ones that are doing it well, they're going to find a lot of success with that niche consumer until that really, you know, kind of goes the way of the oat milk and shows up everywhere.
Yeah, thinking of that niche consumer, one of the things that has always struck me about Expo West is, and Mushroom speaks to this beautifully, how you see products that are so interesting and very clearly a real passion by the people who started the company and created the products that might still be a little bit in search of a consumer base. And I guess a question I would have for the two of you is, what advice would you give these small exhibitors or these companies that are relatively small with a niche product for a niche consumer to potentially appeal to a somewhat broader base of consumers, which they do?
I would say know your market.
It's a $1 million question.
Know your market. So, you know, just because you love something or you had a specific problem, you really need to research how many other people have those same concerns or interests. For instance, you could buy a Mintel report and see if you can get more market size information. But I do walk those aisles and see some passion projects that I am worried about. People put so much of their heart and soul into things that maybe aren't ready for the market, or the market's not ready for them, or they're just too niche. And for instance, there were a couple products that were egg protein snacks. One was really good. One was not good. I actually had to run away and spit it out. Without the people saying But it's like, do I really need to have egg protein as a snack? Can I get that during a meal? You know, do I want to make kind of a pleasurable experience a little more a should rather than a, ooh, I get to eat this thing mid-afternoon?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it really has to be about serving a consumer need, and it really has to taste good to want to buy it consistently, because you're never going to get past a niche audience who's going to be biohacking and, you know, talking peptides and, you know, choosing their aminos and, you know, all of these things, because that's not most of us. Most of us are just trying to reach stasis. Most of us are just trying to get through the day the best we can. So, we also can't forget about the role of pleasure in getting to that place of, you know, like you're talking about your coffee. If I'm going to have one coffee, the function of it is also that little treat and making me feel like I've done, you know, something kind to myself. So I saw a couple of products that felt like, okay, I get this. I get that this is your passion, and I also get why people would get excited about this. And I think that those things, you know, there was a non-alcoholic spritz type product, and it was called Philia. And it was, you know, something that the founder had created because her father struggled with alcoholism, and so she does not drink alcohol. But the products tasted really good. They're in line with the overall non-alcoholic movement. And it's something that you could really see somebody, I'm not so great at bitter things, but somebody who really loves bitter things, it's a really nice, tasty product. I think that when we are trying to jump on a bandwagon of hearing, oh, you know, somebody struggled with this and I'm going to throw a bunch of adaptogens at something. I'm going to throw a bunch of, you know, I can't tell you how many, you know, better for you sodas that we saw. And the ones that, you know, really stuck out to me were the ones that were doing something different. There was one called MyoWell. Well is very much a big word in Expo West, if you haven't noticed. But this was fermenting agave because it has natural prebiotics, and, you know, and the flavors were really good. So it wasn't trying to mask flavors with a bunch of, you know, different natural flavors or sweeteners, or it was just a really nice kind of product. And so I have the most hope for products like that, where you can really see, like with Julie's, that there could really be a pathway for a consumer to kind of fall in love with this and say, oh, that's interesting, and tell a friend, and then they're actually say, oh, this does taste good too.
Yeah, the taste challenge is a huge challenge, I think, for all companies. And I think traditionally Expo West exhibitors often struggle with that just a little bit. I remember the very first Expo West I went to in a completely different time would have been in the late 1980s. And the person I was working with, who was my mentor and showing me the ropes with new product introductions and trends and all of that, said to me, and he had been to that show a million times, he said to me at that time, again, this is like probably 1987, said to me, whatever you do, don't taste anything. Because at that time, the products, there was virtually nothing that tasted good. You went to what was then called a fancy food show to taste all the products that tasted really good. But now it feels like there's much more connection at this show regarding functionality and good taste, mm-hmm. although clearly some big missteps. So it feels like that whole concept of taste is something that is so essential for the exhibitors and those small niche companies to make sure they really, really keep an eye on.
And like Michelle said, to make sure that you're actually asking people other than your friends to tell you if it tastes good.
Yes.
Because that's...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So if those are some messages for some of the smaller, more niche companies, what can big companies, what can the big multinationals, the big local and regional companies, CPG companies, what should they be taking away from the show? What should they be learning from it?
I think something really good for the big companies to be thinking about is the representation of some of the things that they're looking at and testing out, and seeing how many of these small companies are making the claims that they want to be making too. And in that vein, I'm thinking regenerative agriculture or any of these more sustainable supply chains, things like that, because I, you know, have been jotting down, you know, how many of these companies on their booths, on their products are talking about regenerative. And, you know, I started with the small booths, and, you know, I'm up to and it's all small companies. And so yes, it's easier to do that when you're small, but it is something that's definitely part of the conversation. And I was really lovely to see so many of the bigger companies talking about the different ways that they manage their supply chains to do what they can to give back into the earth, into the soil. This is definitely something that did kick off in 2019, and it is really wonderful to see that expanding, and to see the way that companies are trying things out and are able to say, we're putting money into something, we're going to see if this type of, say, irrigation or this type of growing, if that makes an impact. And if it doesn't, we're going to try something else, because we have that power, we have that scale to be able to see if it makes an actionable, tangible difference. And so that's something that I really want to encourage these companies to keep doing, and to keep using their power to, you know, to create these supply chains. And then consumers will appreciate that. You know, they may not know the words regenerative agriculture right now, some of them will, but they will, just the way that they understood pollinators, they understand bees. Like, these things are going to keep, they're going to keep growing.
What did you see at the show that you didn't expect to see? Anything?
Moss water.
Oh, sea moss.
Talk about
sea
what
moss,
that is.
Sea moss.
So there's a company called Moss. They are backed by Michael B. Jordan. So again, that celebrity backed or founded company. And I'm still not quite sure why. It seems like a plentiful, sustainable ingredient, but it wasn't immediately apparent to me why that ingredient should be something I consume. So as far as I know, I mean, I haven't Googled it, but they are the first in that space. And if they can do a good job of really hammering home the benefits of this and the why, you know, they could have something on their hands. They could be first to market with this. And I think that anything related to the oceans that doesn't strip the oceans of their resources could be interesting.
Yeah, I definitely saw some fun ocean or sea-based products. There was a Ocean's Halo was there. They are, you know, a seaweed company. They also do broths and they do ramen kits. They've been around for a while. There was, it was called 12 Tides, I think. They're regeneratively farmed kelp chips. And then there was, actually, I thought this was delightful, and it actually tasted really good. So I want to make sure I get the name right here, because I very much enjoyed this little drink. It was called Umi Marine Plant Drink with Sea Biotics. SEA. So they were using a marine source, and they tasted good. And, you know, it's one of those products that it's probably a passion product. I'm not sure exactly where we're going to go with that, but they got me. So I hope that they got other people. And it is, Lynn, it's like you've said, this is just one of those places where sometimes, you know, wild things happen and you don't expect it to pick up. And sometimes it does. And other times, you know, out into the void it went and it was a flash in the pan. But I think this idea of trying to maximize the resources that we have, looking at things in new ways. There was also a feel good. There's a lot of foods that say like feel good, do good, these types of things. But it was a pork style dumpling that was made with a protein from algae. So I know we've been talking about that. There's algal oils. There's all sorts of these things. So I think if anything, what I love about this show is the amount of creativity and the thinking outside the box, even if some of that may be most applicable for a Southern California demographic, which my friend has said could be its very own market, just products for them. So
I think, Michelle, you had a great answer to a question I was going to ask, which was, what was the strangest or the most unusual product that you've seen that might be moss water? Was there anything else that you saw that would fall under that really unexpected or can't believe somebody came out with this? Anything like that that really shocked you?
Moving into the BPC category, there is a company from the UK called Wype, W-Y-P-E, which is a gel product that turns regular toilet paper into a cleansing wipe for intimate cleansing. We're seeing a lot of these so-called flushable wipes really are not flushable, and they really destroy plumbing systems.
Yes.
We're also seeing finally the American public getting interested in bidets, typically in the form of bidet attachments to the regular toilets. And this is a way to kind of bring that additional down below cleansing to an American audience in a way that's not going to ruin our systems. They were in an aluminum container. So, you know, I saw a lot of aluminum in BPC and household care. But it'll be really interesting to see if that type of product catches on.
The DIY of these things.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. But the whole idea of normalizing or being very open about cleaning down there. And I think what goes along with that, I think also you had talked about deodorants as well. And I think that goes along with your comment about the gel for the toilet paper, because again, it's about normalizing things that we normally don't talk about at all.
We saw a lot of whole body deodorants. The larger brands are running the market with those. So this category was kind of created by Lumi in 2017. We're seeing products from Secret, and I believe Dove has one. I know Old Spice does. But the natural whole body deodorants that I saw at Expo West, they were really promoting the safety of their products, the free from, the natural ingredients. And I think those are really well positioned to make people feel good about applying anywhere and not ending up with a nasty rash. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if those natural products get edged out by their larger competitors, but it's definitely a dynamic space that a lot of brands are rushing to join.
That's interesting. Funny you say that too, because one of the things that I had taken a photo of was from a company called Medicine Mama, and it is the line is Boldly Pure, so the purity part, you know, the safety, vulva care, so for the intimate areas, and just really wanting to make sure that that's done in a very careful way.
Any last comments or observations that you have about Expo West this year?
I would say packaging was kind of the main thing with beauty and personal care. There were some interesting products, but my take was that most of the products were focusing on the sustainability of their packaging or format rather than having any sort of real innovation in the benefits or their functions. So, you know, there's always new interesting oils that people are putting in body care products or hair products, but I noticed that it was more about being plastic free. So having a deodorant be in a, you know, a solely cardboard tube, or there was a company that had a retinol body lotion that right on the cap, it said this cap uses 55% less plastic than a typical dispenser cap. So, and as I mentioned, aluminum was big. Cardboard cartons were big for hair care and home care. So it would be interesting to see if next year when we attend, those BPC products are able to bring some real innovation to their products in addition to the evolution of their sustainable packaging.
Yeah, it's interesting just to add on there a little bit with the aluminum and the move away from plastic. There is, you know, a whole, if you walked outside of the hall, the whole big display from Liquid Death and their whole thing, it's death to plastic. So it's, they're in aluminum and it's, you know, all about moving away from that. One thing I'll just end with is, you know, there are some very unusual things that, you know, we'll have to see as we attend more shows over the year, you know, us and our other colleagues, if some of these things pop up. For instance, there was a lollipop that was from a powdered greens company, so you could get your greens in sucker form. That I'm not sure is going to be a lasting sort of product, but I'll be very interested to see if that pops up at Sweets and Snacks or at Fancy Food or any of the other ones down the year, down the line.
Fascinating. This show never, ever, ever disappoints. There is so much to be surprised by, to be amazed by, to shake your head at, and to think, how did somebody actually come up with that idea? How is that even possible that someone thought that would be a thing? So so for all of you listening in today, I would say thank you so much for joining us to talk about this great trade show. But as you know, the conversation doesn't end here. So if you head over to Mintel's LinkedIn and Instagram, please let us know what you think about this podcast and about any of the others that we've done. If you want to know more about Mintel, visit Mintel.com and sign up to become a member of the free Mintel Spotlight community. So, as I said, we've learned an awful lot here about Expo West. There were a couple things that really stood out to me. One is how important you feel it is for companies to talk about the function of a product first and then talk about the ingredients. I was really taken by all the conversation around things from the ocean. ingredients from the ocean, including moss water, which I think is something we all need to keep an eye open for. And the third one is about care down there, whether it is feminine care or alternatives to bidets, ways to get yourself clean or to not be stinky down there, and the whole focus on the naturalness of the ingredients to help care for that those sensitive areas and be kind to them as well. So make sure you don't miss a single episode. Subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever it is you get your podcasts. Goodbye for now, and we'll catch you next time for a new episode of Little Conversation.